good evening, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for joining. About 3 minutes ago, I got a phone call from my son and daughter-in-law. Their little girl was just born. So, once again, I'm a grandpa, and Molly is an aunt, and baby weighed, 8 pounds, 10 ounces, a biggin'. Let me see, what else can I tell you? Little girl, I don't know what else to say.
Well, except we can say that at least Molly is an aunt now to a child that's younger than
younger than her, right.
And you want to give her name?
Neva. All right, I'll try to focus on the program tonight. But like I said, just a couple of minutes ago, Chris called and said, well, you're a grandpa, so I don't know. We ought to just run a best of program and go drink some champagne. No, we will go. We'll go in a couple of weeks to their home and see this new grandbaby. All right, come back to earth, Mike. Did you hear? I've got to do a bunch of stuff tonight, and this is our last program of the year. We are taking Thursday and Friday off, and Brad Friedman will be filling in for me both those nights. I went to Brad Friedman's website today, bradblog.com, and there are a couple of articles there that you should go check out. Seriously. But Brad will be filling in for me tonight. I don't have anything unusual planned for the program. I'm not. The only reason we do a solstice, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever program is just kind of, I guess, because we have a kid and we like her to celebrate the holidays. But I don't do those end-of-the-year things. I guess I should. Awful lot of stuff to talk about, right? End-of-the-year stuff. This has been one of the worst years for so many Americans. I'm not talking about parents or grandparents. They had their worst years back in the 30s and again in the 40s. But for those of us who didn't experience the Depression or the Second World War, this has been a particularly difficult year. And I think one of the reasons is we're actually seeing something else be born. You know, I don't want to tie everything into the birth of a grandchild, but I was thinking about this. What we are seeing being born, I truly believe this, and I hope the birth is without complications. We're seeing being born the beginnings of awareness that will change fundamentally and forever the way we govern ourselves in this country. I don't know if the process is going to be a quick one or a long, slow, tedious one. I don't know if it's going to be violent or nonviolent. But when you look at what has happened this year around the globe, the awareness, whether it's political or environmental, or the awareness of how capitalism is a death machine and has to be stopped, no matter if it was the uprising in Egypt or Tunisia, or the awareness brought about in this country by the Occupy movement, something has fundamentally changed this year. And I'm sure most people can sense that, people who are still conscious. There are an awful lot of people in this country who are unconscious. They simply don't have any idea of the events swirling around them, whether those events are the events of this year or 10 years ago or 50. It doesn't matter. It's just part of, I guess, being an American is that we are not only politically naive, but historically ignorant. And, you know, ignorance can be rectified. Stupidity is pretty much permanent, but ignorance can be changed. And I think what is happening for the first time in a very long time, maybe the first time ever, the American public has been forced to open its eyes to see what's going on. A significant segment of the American public. And you don't need to tell me about polls on Fox about 22% of Americans support Occupy and 88% don't know what it's all about. No, don't bother. Because anything that comes out of Fox is a stew of swill and garbage and fascism. So no. But a movement that changed the consciousness of this country in much the same way as the civil rights movement did. And only in a more fundamental way, because I think this movement has made it very clear that capitalism is dead. It has killed millions upon millions upon tens of millions upon hundreds of millions of people in its lifetime. Capitalism has. It has, to the extent that it's been able to up to this point, it has destroyed life on Earth. If it is not stopped, and stopped permanently, then this evolutionary experiment of human beings will come to an end. There is no debate about this. The only people who want to debate it are those people who persist in their ignorance, or who are totally stupid. So I think what we saw born this year, or in the process of being born, is an awareness that capitalism must be destroyed, that it is destroying itself, in fact. It's not going to take, I hope, and I don't think it will, take an armed revolution. I don't think it's going to take somebody plunging a knife into the heart of capitalism. It is destroying itself. Here's the problem. As it destroys itself, it's destroying us. And it's destroying the planet. It's destroying the oceans, the atmosphere, everything. That's what has to be stopped. And I think Americans have come, a sizable number of us have come to that awareness. Now, waiting in the wings are a couple of things. Either social democracy, real democracy, people's democracy. That's over here on the one side. On the other side is jackbooted fascism. There's no halfway ground here. There's no middle road. The struggle over the next year, especially, is going to be a continuation of this birth, because this is not going to be something that is going to come quickly or easily. The capitalists are so deeply entrenched in every single aspect of American life, whether it's political, artistic, social, medical, from an energy standpoint, it's everywhere. It is a multi-tentacled beast. But it cannot be reformed. It has to be replaced. And I think that is the struggle that's going to take place, certainly, in a more confrontational way, hopefully peaceful, over the next 12 months. And one of the places you can go to get information about this birth is thepeoplescongress.org. Peoplescongress.org. Now, there are other websites that you can check out, but this is one that is positive. This is one that is beginning to put together how this new birth is going to be handled, delivered, and how it's going to grow. So if you have a chance, go to peoplescongress.org. We'll be right back.
You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons.
no, 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 no.
What a lovely way.
No, 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 no. Okay, thank you. 21 past the hour. That's Kathy's idea of a joke. Come on, Paul Anka pisses me off anyway. I don't, especially that song. Ah! Anyway, Chris and Katie would just whip your ass if they knew you were playing that in acknowledgement of the birth of their child tonight. Anyway, we are experiencing the birth of something, and I think America will be, if we ever wake up from this nightmare, I think America will be forever grateful that the Occupy movement happened. I don't know how many people first went down to Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan, but whoever those people were, and I know that they will be forever anonymous, they were the ones who began the process, the physical process. A lot of people have been talking about this. A lot of people have been blogging, writing, planning. But all of a sudden, a group of people said, okay, let's do this. So, to me, the signal event of 2011, the event that I think history will prove, if we have history, history will prove it was the first shot fired in an attempt to elevate people's consciousness and to let them know that, people in this country anyway, to let them know that it was now time to end permanently the destruction, the rapacious destruction that has given us global war. It has given us a kind of greed that is just unimaginable. And like I said, it's resulted, this capitalist system, it is a murderous system. It has resulted in the deaths of millions upon millions of people, whether it was U.S. capitalism or German capitalism or it doesn't make any difference. British capitalism, Indian capitalism, it makes no difference who the capitalist vampire was using at any time in history to slash and burn and murder and destroy and kill and pollute and denigrate and dishonor. It doesn't make any difference. And my impression, just mine, my impression of the Occupy movement is that it was a movement and is a movement that forced people to open their eyes, those who are still capable of seeing. Remember, there are none so blind as those who will not see. And this is not about politics. This is the thing that is so disturbing to me. Well, not disturbing. It's so expected, anticipated, that the right wing in this country will try to make this political. This is a survival event. This is not political. This is about the survival of the human race and ultimately the planet. It's not political. But the people in the fascist corner who had been waiting with their fangs out to leap onto the corpse before it's even cold, they don't understand. I used to think that fascists were teachable. They are not. When the wars are over, the fascists have to be imprisoned or hanged or given a cyanide capsule so they can kill themselves. There is no way that you can ever break through. This is why I don't talk with right-wingers. This is why they are not welcome here. This is why it's pointless to bring these people on. They call the program. But to bring them on just to jiggle them around is ridiculous. There is no way to reach them. And that's probably the way it should be. So It's been a very powerful year, and I don't think that the actual power of this movement, the Occupy movement, has yet made itself known. We know it's there. We know something fundamental has awakened. And it's the desire to kill the monster, because the monster has been killing us for 200 years. Longer than that, actually. But it's time to stop it. Now, when we come back, I'll get into some of the clown show of today, especially what's going on in Iowa. It is the dead of winter, officially now, so we can talk about the clown show. Come the spring, things are going to change dramatically. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Doing in Iowa anyway. I mean, just go home, cowboy. Really. This is what he said. Was it yesterday about Canadian oil, the tar sands? He said, quote, every barrel of oil that comes out of those sands in Canada is a barrel of oil that we don't have to buy from a foreign source. He said that. Oh, it's all over the web. Jesus. This group of buffoons wants to push one of their members forward to run this country? Really? Jim Morgan sent me, I think he wrote it, his blog. He says, we give all these Republican fourth and fifth rate fools the same credibility and respect we give to Nobel Prize laureates, but they live on the other side of the bell curve. It's as if the Republicans are promoting illiterate stutterers for class valedictorian. Okay, now, I'm just quoting something. No offense to people with a speech impediment. I understand. It can be overcome. It takes a lot of hard work. But this is just a flip comment that Jim put in his blog. He goes on, he says, and as the Republican clown car of candidates continues to sputter and lurch its way around the big tent, Rupert Murdoch continues to rake in ticket money, and the other networks hawk cotton candy in the bleachers. Woo! Referring to these mental midgets, Jim goes on, they lie, they cheat, they exaggerate, they bluster, they say one idiotic, ignorant, outrageous thing after another. They've shown such stark lack of knowledge, political, economic, geographic, historical, that they make George W. Bush look like Einstein, and even cause their fellow Republicans to cringe. We are the world's sole remaining superpower. What we do affects every other nation on earth. For that reason alone, the caliber of our leadership matters. For that reason alone, our elections are important to others. An incompetent can do so much damage. Just look at the last 10 years. We don't exist in a vacuum. For proof, look at our economy and the Bush global crash. When it comes to our politics, the whole world is watching, and it's not just a phrase. The whole world is watching, and they are laughing. What has happened to our national self-respect? When are we as a nation going to take our heads out of our collective ass and start acting like adults? Jim Morgan. Well, it's not going to happen, Jim. Not under the present configuration of our political economic system. It would be nice if it would. It would be nice if the American public, in toto, I'm not talking about those of us who still have a mind, those of us who can still think, but if the American public, taken together, could look at this clownish group of axe murderers who now represent the Republican Party's attempt to get the White House, and take a look at these teabag halfwits who now infest the Congress. If we could take a look at this. Oh, and the Democrats who sit back on their asses and get rich and do nothing to stop. A matter of fact, they encourage the move to fascism, just not so quick. If we could wake up to this, you see, if we could figure this out, if we could look at this and understand that that light at the end of the tunnel is the epiphanous headlight on the front of an onrushing freight train, then what we would do would be to immediately turn our backs on this whole system and walk away. Because the system, the political and economic system, cannot function without our cooperation. Why is that so hard to understand? Well, I guess it isn't for most people. Well, for a plurality of people. It can't function. That's why time and time and time again, we've talked about, and others have talked about, a national strike, a sit down, put 30 million people in the street, stop everything. That'll get their attention. But it's way past that time. It's way past that time. We still need to put the 30, 40, 50 million people in the street, but not as a means of reforming the political economic system that we now are dying under. And when I say we are dying, everything is dying. Are you kidding me? Everything is dying. So we have to stop it. I mean, what are we going to do? Roll over and just stick our legs and arms in the air and say, okay, I surrender. You win. No. And again, I want to mention this again. Go to this website. Check it out. peoplescongress.org. Or you'll have your website that that is inspiring you or leading you to direct, peaceful, nonviolent action come this spring or summer. This is the time to think and to study. This is the winter. I realize the winter is non-existent in certain parts of the country right now due to global climate change. Don't want to say that too loud and really irritate the managers of some of my affiliates who carry this program. But it's winter. It's a time to gather strength. It's time to let ideas germinate, and then come spring, percolate, and then come summer, burst out. So take this time. I swear to you, that's what I'm doing this winter. Studying, thinking, reading, trying to pack as much knowledge into my skull as I possibly can about political movements, about progressivism, about saving the planet, environmentalism, about social democracy. I mean, just studying some of the people who have tried over the past centuries to explain to us this can't continue. And it did continue. And now it really can't. So you can do that. If I can do it, dear God, so can you. In the meantime, Well, I'll get to that in a second. Another thing that, before I get to the Iran situation, I have to talk about it for a couple of reasons, but Newt Gingrich said today that luxury cruise he took through the Greek Isles earlier this year that prompted his aides to resign, that cruise was, his words, designed to show, quote, he's, quote, a different kind of candidate, end quote. He said that being in Greece during that country's financial crisis was helpful. He said, quote, it gave me a much deeper perspective of how hard this is going to be. You rancid son of a bitch. You rancid bowl of rotten cottage cheese. Newt, take your automaton, old lady, and get the hell off the stage. Good God. Your cruise in the Greek Isles, huh? Gave you time to appreciate what? My God. I can't go on with that article. I just can't. I just can't. Where were the Somalia pirates when you really want them to show up? I guess they don't go into the Mediterranean, do they? Iran and the United States elevated the belligerent tone between them on Wednesday over an Iranian vow to close the Strait of Hormuz, a vital Middle East waterway for oil tanker traffic, if Western powers attempted to make good on their threat to stifle Iran's petroleum exports. That's the lead from Rick Gladstone's piece on NewYorkTimes.com. This Iran thing, huh? You know, it's just amazing. If you go back to 1953, the Iranians had just... We're recovering, as the globe was, from World War II and the breakup of various empires and the redrawing by the Western powers of various Middle Eastern boundaries. And then something really nice happened in Iran. We'll talk about it in a second.
Wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Occupy is not completely asleep, obviously. They are in Iowa trying to occupy the caucus apparatus there. I'm talking about the majority of Occupy. All right. Iran and the United States. In 1951, excuse me, Mohammad Mossadegh was... democratically elected by the parliament to be prime minister of Iran. He stayed in office until 1953, when he was overthrown in a coup handled by British MI5 and the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. Let me tell you a little bit about Mossadegh. He was from an aristocratic background. He was an author, an administrator, a lawyer, a prominent parliamentarian, and politician. During his time as prime minister, a wide range of progressive social reforms were carried out. Unemployment compensation was introduced. Factory owners were ordered to pay benefits to sick and injured workers. Peasants were freed from forced labor in their landlords' estates. 20% of the money the landlords received in rent was placed in a fund to pay for development projects such as public baths, rural housing, and pest control. He's most famous, Mossadegh is, as the architect of the nationalization of the Iranian oil industry, which had been under British control since 1913, through a company called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. Later, the name was changed to British Petroleum, BP. The Anglo-Iranian Oil Company was controlled by the British government. After Mossadegh decided to nationalize his country's resources, oil, he was removed as prime minister in a coup organized and carried out by the United States CIA at the request of British MI6, which chose Iranian General Fazlollah Zahidi to succeed Mossadegh. The coup was referred to in English-speaking countries as Operation Ajax. Mossadegh was imprisoned for 3 years and then put under house arrest until his death. And what did Mossadegh do? He was elected democratically, as much democracy as was available. He was a progressive who then tried to institute reforms for his people. But he decided to take over his own country's resource, oil. And, of course, the Americans and the Brits would have none of that. After Fazlollah Zahidi served his purpose, the U.S. returned to power the Shah. Reza Pahlavi, the Shah of Iran. Shah has the same root meaning as Tsar or Caesar, Shah. And the first thing that the U.S. did was assist the Shah in establishing a secret police force called the Savak, and helping the Savak set up torture rooms, torture chambers, firing squads, and death squads to make sure that any resistance, any attempt to go back to the progressive ideas instituted by Mossadegh, especially that one about nationalizing Iran's oil companies or oil resources for the people of Iran, that those people would be dealt with severely, usually murdered very quickly after being tortured. This went on until 1979 when the American embassy was overrun and the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been living in Paris, returned to rule Iran. Isn't it interesting how all this happens? All about oil, all about capitalism. When the Iranians stormed the U.S. embassy, they held their hostages for, 400-plus days, I think, finally released them as a result of a deal worked out between Ronald Reagan's operatives and George W. Bush and the right-wing Republicans that made it very clear that everything would be okay if they just waited until Reagan was elected. They'd get a much better deal. Reagan wouldn't try to free any hostages the way Carter did. So then the Iranians did the unspeakable. They decided to emulate the 8 or 9 countries on this planet that have nuclear weapons and develop their own. Oh, I know. It's called a nuclear power generating system. And well, it may be. But it also carries with it the possibility, no, the probability that Iran is going to, and is getting very close to, developing fissionable nuclear material so that they too can be like Pakistan or China or India or Israel or the UK or France or the United States or Russia. And soon Brazil will join that club too. But the U.S. said no. And they played the Israeli card. No, you can't have nuclear weapons because you'll nuke Israel. And here the story gets really sordid. And we'll go over it when we come back because it brings us right up to the saber rattling of today. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. So where were we? Okay, the Iranians elect a prime minister. The U.S. and the Brits overthrow him, put him under house arrest for the rest of his life, simply because he was a progressive and wanted to Iran to get the full benefits of Iranian oil. And then after a series of events, we install the Shah of Iran. He is overthrown when he is seeking cancer treatment, I believe, or maybe not. Maybe he had left the country because he didn't want to be killed and then develop cancer. It's okay. The historical reference is correct, even though I may have the timeline wrong. So anyway, now the nuclear thing starts to present itself. Only the nuclear thing is not new. It goes all the way back to the mid-70s. Back to a time when Gerald Ford and then Jimmy Carter, and in there also was Henry Kissinger, when the Iranians under the Shah decided that they wanted to, as a matter of national sovereignty, they were going to develop a nuclear energy program. Nuclear energy. Of course, we know what that means. When you develop a nuclear energy program, you have as a very convenient byproduct of that program, plutonium. Ta-da! And you know what you can do with plutonium. No, other than that. So, the Shah is overthrown. The nuclear program continues. And once it becomes clear that the Iranians have finally had enough of the United States, it's one-sided treatment of the horrors of the Middle East vis-a-vis Israel and the Palestinians. And the fact that the Iranians are just tired of being considered a third-rate country by the United States and Great Britain. This has been going on now for decades. So they begin to assert themselves as a regional power. Everybody has a right to be a regional power, right? But, oh no, we're not going to have nuclear power. Why not? Well, things could happen. So the U.S. begins this process of intimidation against the Iranians. Now, Keep in mind that Dick Cheney and his filthy companies were doing business in Iran while Dick Cheney was Vice President of the United States. Cheney had his representatives in Iran dickering here and making little deals there. Cheney is a murderous son of a bitch who... Never mind. I don't want to digress into Cheney. So the relationship between Iran and the United States has been ambiguous at best. But underneath it all was this U.S. and at one time Great Britain insistence that we had to get our hands deep into the natural resources of Iran. Oil, of course, it's always oil. The one thing that we all are going to die from, oil. Oil. So, then began the more recent events. We tell Iran, okay, if you don't stop your nuclear program, we're going to boycott your country. We're going to get other countries not to do business with you. We're going to bring the hammer down on you. And Iran gives the United States the middle finger and reasserts that it thinks Israel has no right to be there. So then we say, okay, then I'll tell you what else we're going to do. We're going to freeze your foreign assets. We're going to get all the banks all around the globe to freeze your assets, Iran. Ha ha. What do you think of that? Now, in the meantime, the chatter in the background is United States and Israel deciding, well, do you think we should nuke them? I don't know. What about bunker busters? Yeah, well, I think tactical nukes would do that. You think so? Well, if we drop tactical nukes, there's going to be a lot of adverse publicity. Oh, we can overcome that. We'll just let Fox News in. Well, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? Iran continues to develop its nuclear program. So the U.S. takes it a further step. We're going to freeze all your assets. We're going to make sure that you can't do business globally. We are going to kick your ass, Iran. We are going to stomp you like the cockroach we think you are. How about that? Well, what's a regional would-be superpower to do but to say, okay, I'll see your threat to freeze my assets and raise you the Straits of Hormuz. What? Yeah, you know, who's the guy, one of the leading military people, was it today, said that blocking the Straits of Hormuz, through which 60-70% of the world's oil has to be shipped, blocking the Straits of Hormuz would be like drinking a glass of water? Oh, we've heard this threat before, right? The United States and much of the Western world will send wave upon wave upon wave of young people to die in order to keep the Straits of Hormuz open. This is what capitalism insists on. Don't forget, oil is the oil that runs the capitalist machine. Without oil to oil the gears, the capitalist machine would start to shake. The engine mounts would start to get a little wobbly, and the thing might come off the track. So, oil! Oil! Only it's, we're going to send you over to fight these Sharia law people, the Muslims, the car coming. You go fight for freedom and dignity and American way of life. We've seen this movie before, didn't we? Back in 2002, 2001, back during the 90s, right? We've seen this. Only Iraq was in the gun sights then. So today, when the military, the number one or number two military person in Iran says, you know how easy it would be to stop your life's blood just by making the Straits of Hormuz impassable? It'd be like drinking a glass of water. So, So what does the United States and Israel and the capitalists and the banksters and the real power in this country say? Let's be very clear, Iran. If you do that, we will end your country. So, now it's up to the Iranians again. We've upped the ante. I wonder how they're going to up the ante. But don't kid yourself for a second, truth seeker, to think that this is about anything but one more attempt by the capitalists to start another goddamn war. They don't care. And now it's Iran. And let's not forget 1975 when then Secretary of State Henry Kissinger circulated what was referred to as National Security Decision Memorandum 292 on, quote, U.S.-Iran nuclear cooperation, which outlined the Ford administration's negotiating strategy for the sale of nuclear energy equipment to Iran. Sound familiar? Huh? Henry Kissinger suggested to the Shah, after all, they were a solid U.S. ally. They had torture chambers. They had the Savak. They were willing to kill and murder and torture their own citizens in order to keep the oil flowing to the Americans and the Brits and whomever else. So Henry Kissinger said to Gerald Ford, well, they're an ally. You know, this is a commercial transaction. This is not about nuclear weaponry. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Ho, ho. Isn't history a bitch? Iran's naval commander, Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari, said, quote, Iran has total control over the strategic waterway. Closing the Strait of Hormuz is very easy for Iranian naval forces. These are remarks carried by Press TV, Iranian television, official Iranian news site. Admiral Sayari, whose forces are in the midst of an amphibious war games exercise in waters near the Strait of Hormuz, was the second top Iranian official to make such a threat in 24 hours. The U.S. responded. A spokeswoman for the 5th Fleet Command in Manama, Bahrain, said, quote, the free flow of goods and services through the Strait of Hormuz is vital to regional and global prosperity. Anyone who threatens to disrupt freedom of navigation in an international strait is clearly outside the community of nations. Any disruption will not be tolerated, end quote. The statement also said that the U.S. Navy is a flexible, multi-capable force committed to regional security and stability. Stability for the capitalist predators to continue. Always ready to counter malevolent actions to ensure freedom of navigation, end quote. So here we sit. It reminds me of something that Busta Rhymes put out a number of years ago, and I've played it so many times, the CD is probably starting to burn up. It's called Extinction Level Event, and it could be, well, let's listen to it.
Daddy, what's it gonna be like?
Well, sweetheart, for your sake, I hope it'll be all peaches and cream. But I'm afraid the end time is near. The cataclysmic apocalypse referred to in the scriptures of every holy book known to mankind. It will be an era fraught with boundless greed and corruption, where global monetary systems disintegrate, leaving brother to kill brother for a grain of overcooked rice. The nations of the civilized world will collapse under the oppressive weight of parasitic political conspiracies which remove all hope and optimism from their once faithful citizens. Around the globe, generations of polluters will be punished for their sins, unshielded by the ozone layer they have successfully depleted, left to bake in the searing naked rays of light. Wholesale assassinations serve to destabilize every remaining government, leaving the starving and wicked to fend for themselves. Bloodthirsty renegade cyborgs created by tax-dodging corporations wreak havoc. Pissed off androids tired of being slaves to a godless and gutless system where the rich get richer. Unleash total worldwide destruction by means of nuclear holocaust, annihilating the terrified masses, leaving in its tortuous wake nothing but vicious, cannibalistic, mutated, radiated, and horribly disfigured hordes of satanic killers bent on revenge, but against whom there are so few left alive. Starvation reigns supreme, forcing unlucky survivors to eat anything and anyone in their path. Massive earthquakes crack the planet's crust like a hollow eggshell, causing unending volcanic eruptions. The creatures of the seven seas, unable to escape to certain death upon land, boil in their liquid prison. Disease encircles the earth. Plagues and viruses with no known cause or cure, laying waste to whatever draws breath. And humankind, having proven itself to be nothing more than a race of ruthless scavengers, fall victim to merciless attack at the hands of interplanetary alien tribes who seek to conquer our charred remains. This is Extinction Level Event.
Wow, that's cool. I can't hardly wait.
You don't have to, because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is.
When did that come out? About 12 years ago, wasn't it? Talk about prescient. You know, all the more reason to get ready for the change that is going to occur, because I don't think that we're quite ready to annihilate ourselves. I could be wrong. I mean, most of the people running for office are into that. They couch it as patriotism or preserving a certain way of life or defending freedom or, you know. But what it really gets down to when you look at it is annihilation. And I just can't believe that we common folk are ready for self-annihilation. I mean, we have kids and mamas and daddies and grandparents and nieces and nephews and cousins and, you know, we want to get together next November for Thanksgiving, or maybe take a little time off and hang out with the family, or I don't know, watch sunrise and sunset. I don't think we're quite ready. We common folk, the elites, are ready. They have their protective masks and their hidey holes and places to go as they begin the process of triggering a global meltdown. But we can stop them. We really can.
Oh,
right, Truth Seekers, let's open up the phone lines. 877-996-2556 is the number if you would like to join in the fun and frivolity that we are doing here tonight. While you are dialing from Prairie 2, the stock market took a big dip today on reports that the European banks are hoarding the cash they were recently provided by the European Central Bank to keep them solvent. A failure to loan money will reinforce the austerity death spiral that Europe is already undertaking. If these reports are accurate, then Wall Street took it rather calmly. It should be raining stockbrokers. Oh, well, they only lose your money. Threats from Iran to block the Strait of Hormuz, cutting off 20% of the world's oil supply, I think it's higher than that, Prairie 2, came in response to new sanctions against anyone who trades with Iran. The oil market hasn't reacted to the threat yet, but the U.S. corporate media is talking it up on one hand and dismissing it on the other. But they're also talking $5 gasoline by summer just the same. Under the new sanctions, it could, in theory, become difficult for any country to buy oil from Iran. It was a year of records for gasoline in the U.S. Record low demand, record high consumer expenditures for gas, and record high exports of gasoline and diesel out of the United States. That's the so-called free market for you. It's only free for billionaires who are free to take as much as they can. As much as they can gouge out of you. For those of you too young to remember, before the unchecked spree of the Bush crime family, gasoline was under a dollar. The 10-year embargo on Iraq oil exports was about to end, potentially flooding an already glutted world market with really cheap oil, and Al Gore was elected president. Under Bush, we saw oil go from $18 a barrel to $140 a barrel. It did fall to half that when the Wall Street banks were temporarily forced from the market, but has since reclaimed the $100 a barrel level and could surge again with the Iran war. The Dodd-Frank Act specifically bans banks from this sort of trading, but the Republicans dominate the federal commissions that are effectively gutting the law. Obama is being blocked from making appointments by the Senate and from making recess appointments by the House, whose permission is required by the Senate to adjourn. When will the 99% stop giving everything to the 1% on the free market? And then letting the 1% charges for it. Prairie 2. Bruce Enberg. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. After the revolution, by the way, I don't know if anyone has told you, but after the revolution, Bruce is going to be the Secretary of Commerce. No? You didn't know that? Oh, the head of the Treasury Department? No, I think he'd like to be Secretary of Commerce. All right. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, buddy?
It's moving along.
Been a while since I've talked to you.
It has indeed.
I've been doing some thinking, too. You know, you were talking earlier about take this time, think about what we can do, and let it
right.
do in the spring and then kind of explode in the summer. I've got some ideas that I wanted to kick around with you just a little bit.
Okay.
Or one idea in particular. You know, the times that we find ourselves in now seem like they, you know, harken back to the Vietnam era, you know, a lot, you know, and not exactly, but a lot. And I think if you remember back, one of the things that actually brought an end to the Vietnam War and all this aggression that we had at the time was actually these people that you and I both hold in low esteem, but it's the Christian fundies. They actually got on board, you know, with the peace movement at the end of the Vietnam thing. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Many, many churches were actually involved. They actually got a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it happened after things like My Lai. But see, at that time we had a news organization that would actually tell us about it. Now we've got, you know, things like Haditha and worse and Fallujah and all the rest of it. But, you know, nobody really wants to talk about that on the news because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not going to help their cause much. You know, since they're in bed with the military media industrial complex, you know what I'm saying? But what I was thinking was this. How can you get these people to wake up and actually get a conscience, start thinking about what we're doing in the world? And I came up with an idea that maybe, just maybe, that since you can't do it through talking to them, you know, that's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can do it through music. Because music has a way of reaching, down into your soul and grabbing you sometimes when you don't think that you can be reached. You know what I'm saying? That there are songs and stuff that actually can stir your soul.
Well, yeah, but that's on the assumption that certain people have a soul.
Well, that's true. And I do believe that many of these people that go to church actually, are... In the basis sense, they have some degree of humanity still left in them. And I do think it can be reached. And I tell you what I've done. I've thought about this a long time, and I spent a lot of time on the Internet over at Neil Young's Living with War website.
Right.
I noticed you played a number of tunes that have come from there.
Mm-hmm.
As your background music, some other stuff. But I've called this thing, and I've gotten a lot of stuff together to make a CD. And here's what I'm thinking. I'm going to send you a copy of the CD. I hope that the P.O. box on your website is still correct.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Okay. I'm going to send you a copy of the CD, and I'd like for you to just listen to it and tell me what you think about it. But it's put together in such a way as to raise the consciousness of these people. And I'm thinking, what would happen one day if maybe after church on Sunday afternoon when these people came out,
mm-hmm.
that one of these CDs was under the windshield wipers on their cars? Think about it. Now, I've done a lot of work with CDs and stuff in the past, during the Bush administration years and stuff, and I think I've talked to you a little bit about it
mm-hmm.
on the air. But think about that. But what you really need to do first is hear what I put together. It's a pretty good little system, I think, that it might actually get the job done. But mm-hmm. I'm going to send you a copy of it.
All right. I'd appreciate that, Mike.
But that's my thinking on it, is if we can get some of these people, to switch over and start thinking with their brains and get a conscience again, we might actually be able to do something about it.
Well, I'm all for music on for a number of reasons, and I hope that your optimism is rewarded, because I've found, and maybe it's because I'm such a cynic now, but I've found that so many of the very people that you want to reach are just beyond being reached.
Well, they're absolutely closed-minded. There's no question about that, Mike. I mean,
right.
We both know that. You can't talk to them. You can't talk to them at all.
Correct.
But if music has a way of getting under that layer of protection that they put up, that's actually reinforced, mm-hmm. by everything around them. And I think this may have a shot. But I do want to send it to you, unless you have a good listen to it. And then you can discuss, maybe even play some of the cuts on your show.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate your time, Mike, and you keep up the good work, buddy.
All right. All right. Thanks, Mike. Always good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
You too.
All right, pal. Yeah. No, Mike's absolutely right. If music soothes the savage beast and all that, that's interesting to me. I remember years ago, when I was, a young teenager, we had just gotten television, and a program started showing up, I think it's when I was a teenager, called Leonard Bernstein's Young People's Concerts. Remember that? They would be on live television. And what Leonard Bernstein would do, would take a piece of classical music and break it down and show you how show you very clearly how music began with the simplest music, which is a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And the way he did it was so effective. He showed how there are you'll find phrases in music that are then answered either immediately or a little bit later on, a few measures down, in a piece of music. And he said the reason for that in classical music is because the original music was a mother's heartbeat. And inside the womb would be this sound effect. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. So music does have a calmative or a calming property. It's probably one of the major properties of music. I'm not talking about, you know, Kevin Kinney or... We'll be right back. That was you. Before the hour, after the break, I want to share with you something that Russ Baker has written at whowhatwhy.com, justifying war with Iran. Andy is in Garberville, California. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. Say, I'm the Green running for Congress on the North Coast of California.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, we talked about a month ago.
I remember.
And you know what? I wasn't able to give out my website because of the top of the hour. Can I give it out now?
You sure can.
Okay. My last name is Caffrey, and so the site is caffreyforcongress.org. That's C-A-F-F-R-E-Y. And if folks want to go there now, they can kind of follow what I'm about to talk to you about.
Okay.
Now, as I mentioned last time, I've been an organizer my whole life. I'm 54, and I'm not really interested in doing that much that's symbolic. I'm really interested in, well, power. Mm-hmm. How do we get power, and what do we do with it? And along those lines, there's a certain framing that activists get into. You kind of brought it up, and I wanted to respond to it, which is sort of, well, all kinds of things just seem so unlikely. You know, in terms of my campaign, what could one really awesome person in Congress do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also brought up, well, what if we had 10 or 20 Michael Moores and Amy Goodman?
Sure.
And we can get into that on another conversation. But the bottom line is we start with likelihood, and then we psych ourselves out. What I do is I always start with what is our plight and what needs to be done. I don't start with what can we get the Democrats and Republican corporatists to do.
Right.
Then, once you do that, then some ideas start to come together. And,
mm-hmm.
and what I wanted to tell you tonight is a story about the first campaign against genetically engineered organisms and how something that nobody ever expected to happen because we showed up and we used all the tools that we could come up with.
Yeah, he was appointed vice president, but that's a whole different story. Go ahead.
In 1986, Jeremy Rifkin, who was pretty much the only guy talking about genetically modified organisms, called up the East Bay Green Alliance and said, hey, this company has engineered this bacteria called Frostban, and they want to do a test in your neighborhood. Can you do a demonstration? And we did, and we got some coverage in Newsweek or Time, a column story, and that was all well and good. And then the company screwed up really bad, and the test was canceled for a year. And when they came back the second year, they contacted our Bay Area Earth First group. Now, at that time, we were probably the most together Earth First group in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We had a co-founder, Mike Rozelle, and then Randy Hayes, the two of them formed the Rainforest Action Network out of what we're doing. And Mike is now doing Climate Ground Zero against the mountaintop removal stuff. So we were doing a lot of things, and nobody had the time or the energy to put into this new test that was going to happen. So I had some background in genetics, and I said, okay, well, I'll start doing something. And Paul Watson the Sea Shepherd guy, was giving a talk, and I went up to him and said, can I talk before you and try to recruit some folks? And he said, sure. And about eight people came up, and really just kind of a normal suburban group. No activist types, not the anarchist types, nothing. Just middle-class mom and her 15-year-old boy and a couple old geezers and some other people.
Right.
So we ran this campaign, and what we did was everything we could think of. We showed up at the hearings where the company was presenting how cool this technology was. We filed lawsuits. The state Senate president, his brother, was an attorney, and we started writing our own legislation that would require companies doing these tests to have all of their liability coverage before they could do the test. And since Lloyd's of London has said that would be too expensive, it could have shut down that whole part of the industry. And we circulated petitions, got one out of three people signing that, and we got on TV a lot. I was probably on 30 news shows in the entire Bay Area, all the stations, including the lead story, a live interview with NBC 6 o'clock news. So suddenly these things started to come around. And the reason they did is, first of all, we were respectful to the reporters, and we were factual. And I basically said, you know, I could be wrong about this, but here is the document that points to this conclusion. You can check it out yourself. And so they ended up on one night, four stations covering all different aspects of the issue. So what happened was we lost the lawsuit and the test was going to take place. And we organized a sabotage action to pull up those plants that were going to be sprayed with this organism. And the organism, basically, it's called Frostban or Ice Minus because it has a structure on the outer part of the cell that causes ice to form 4 degrees above freezing. So the idea is snip that out, crowd out the naturally occurring bacteria with this mutant, and frost won't occur until 4 degrees lower. Mm-hmm. So we pulled up the plants. They went ahead with the test. There were two more tests. They were hit, too. A year later, I called the head of the company to find out what had happened because there was a story that said that the test, the bacteria had gotten out. And he said, you don't know how successful you've been. Our investors are pulling out because they perceive that you guys are never going to give up.
Right.
And we had done everything you can imagine. And then a year later, the company went bankrupt. Now, the best part of the story is that that was 1987. This was a genetically engineered microbe to be released into the open environment. There were going to be 33 or so in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know how many there have been since then? Zero.
Right.
Zero tests. So we never planned to bankrupt this company. We just planned to stop the test if we could. And we didn't do that, but we kept on working, and we used our wits. And I think people, when you think about electoral politics or getting someone like me or Michael Moore or Bill Moyers, whoever elected, it's a matter of numbers. You just start working on it. You don't think, oh, it's unlikely we can get these numbers. In my case, it's about 40,000 people in a district of 700,000 people. So I basically just want to, you know, get your listeners to realize, you know, be creative. Don't just think about, you know, it's get outside the box. Don't just think about the traditional ways of organizing and work together and stay focused.
That's so true, Andy. That's so true. Caffrey, C-A-F-F-R-E-Y.
Yep.
Okay.
Or Congress.
Let's see if we can get people there. Andy, stay in touch.
I will.
All right. Thanks
so much for what you're doing.
All right. I appreciate you calling. Caffrey for Congress.org. Check it out. C-A-F-F-R-E-Y for Congress.org. Check this website. Listen to what the man's doing. Read. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's the hour. This is the Malloy Program. I want to follow up on that talk about Iran. Russ Baker, whose website is whowhatwhy.com, when he first started that, we had him on, if you'll remember, a long time ago. He has the following. A growing body of evidence points to a concerted campaign to prepare Americans and the world for war against Iran. This is not idle speculation. It fits a pattern that repeatedly preceded previous hostilities. Here are the recent examples on Iran. First, the claim that Iran is a weapons of mass destruction threat. Pretty much everyone is familiar with the long-term continuing efforts to paint Iran as some kind of nuclear threat. This ignores the possibility that Iran is telling the truth and contending it is embarked on solely non-military nuclear research. And serious doubts among many experts that Iran is preparing nuclear weapons. Perhaps most important, it discounts the fact that many countries, including Iran's arch enemy, Israel, have nuclear weapons. And disregards the undoubted truth that if a country like Iran ever did launch nuclear weapons, it would be wiped out in a nanosecond, creating a very strong disincentive for offensive use. At the same time, by encouraging other countries and internet internal foes to believe that it has nuclear weapons, Iran creates an inexpensive protective shield for its regime. A dangerous game, to be sure, but without further evidence of Iranian nukes, hardly a reason to launch a war that would surely cause even more death and destruction than the misguided Iraq invasion. Second, the claim that Iran tried to hire Mexican drug cartel hit squads to kill a Saudi ambassador on U.S. soil. Remember this one? So ludicrous that even ultra-cautious corporate news organizations laughed it out of the spotlight. Still, it may have been a test of what will fly. And likely it did impact a percentage of the population, particularly those getting their info from jingoistic outlets like Fox. And third, the claim that Iran was complicit in the 9/11 attacks. A federal judge reviewing evidence presented in a lawsuit on behalf of 9/11 victims concluded this month that the evidence proved Iran, quote, provided direct support to Al-Qaeda specifically for the attacks on September 11, 2001, end quote. Now, this one may gain traction due to powerful lingering emotions on the topic. Because this ruling and the underlying lawsuit are based largely on the claims of defectors, and past experience shows that defectors frequently trade politically value assertions for personal benefits, more research is needed on this. Remember the discredited CIA Iraq source, Curveball? The cited National Security Administration intercepts also bring to mind the intercepts put forward as proof that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. It is further worth noting that the defendant in this case, Iran, was not present to challenge the assertions. In addition, examination of many of the plaintiff assertions shows that they may misrepresent circumstantial evidence. Example, several of the 9/11 hijackers transited Iran, this is in the lawsuit, on their way to or from Afghanistan, taking advantage of the Iranian practice of not stamping Saudi passports, end quote. This ignores the fact that Iran, which is an enemy of Saudi Arabia, makes a practice of not stamping Saudi passports so that Saudi nationals, especially minority Shiites, do not get in trouble with Saudi authorities on their return, similar to Cuba's practice of not stamping American passports. This story has yet to break big, but count on the ruling, this judge's ruling, to be cited increasingly in the months ahead by those pushing for war. And here are a few past examples, 1990 to 2011. Blame Saddam Hussein for incubator baby deaths. and plots against Bush's father. Provoke him by slant drilling from Kuwait, then imply no objection if he takes action. Blame him for 9/11 complicity, falsely tie him to Al-Qaeda, claim he possesses weapons of mass destruction and poses an imminent threat, misrepresent claims to make it seem that he did not destroy WMD stocks as ordered. In Libya, blame Gaddafi for Lockerbie bombings, mass rapes, mass murder, fund an uprising, then bomb Gaddafi for humanitarian reasons when he responds in order to assure his survival. That didn't work, did it? You don't have to approve of these regimes to see that these appear to be, and in many cases certainly were, false provocations that reek of ulterior motives. Hint, how many of these countries are oil exporters? In fact, you can abhor these regimes and hope that they will not survive and still realize how problematical it is for the American government to repeatedly foist big lies on its own people. This kind of thing is beneath any administration claiming lofty ideals and purporting to serve the public interest, and something that none of us should feel comfortable being party to. If the public interest is defined as, quote, seizing oil wherever it may be found, end quote, then, well, that's a conversation we need to have, and quick. There are severe consequences of this definition. Among them, the empowerment of those forces, both corporate and governmental, that profit most from the unbridled development of fossil fuels, and that have good reasons to block the development of renewable sources of energy. They're known today as the 1%, and they are destroying our world. Russ Baker, writing at his website, whowhy.com. It's an excellent site, and I strongly recommend that you check it out. whowhy.com. All right? So, do you feel that? I certainly agree with Russ that I remember the first Iraq war, Operation, what was it, Desert Storm? And the interesting part of that was that Schwarzkopf, the general who led that operation, was, I think, either the son or the grandson of the U.S. CIA operative who assisted in the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh in 1953. But if you'll remember, the lead up to the first invasion of Iraq in 1991, right before George Herbert Walker Bush was voted out of office, and another corporatist worse than George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, was put in office. If you remember, prior to the first invasion of Iraq, all the talk, all the insistence that we had to do this because Iraq was becoming a major regional force, and they had weapons of mass destruction. I'm talking about the first time. They had poison gas and biochemical weapons and biological weapons, and they were murdering babies, and they were killing their own people. That part was probably true. The Kurds who were murdered with the help provided by Donald Rumsfeld. This is madness. This is just goddamn insanity.
for Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Have you gone to peoplescongress.org during any of the breaks tonight? Good, good. Bruce in California wants me to remind you that the Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map is a meme that has no basis in reality. And the reason I repeated it in my little story earlier about Iran was out of a sense of irony. But let me share with you what Bruce wrote. How many times have you heard that? It's a claim that has been repeated so many times in the mainstream press that it has become fact. But the reality is very different from what we hear. After the initial report surfaced of an alleged statement by Ahmadinejad, I found this at antiwar.com. It shows unequivocally that the words attributed to him were simply never said. It's important to recognize that this is not fact, but propaganda, Bruce in California. And then he lists antiwar.com and an absolute URL to the Ahmadinejad story. You can find it if you want to go to antiwar.com and just type it in. Yeah, right, Bruce. He may have a deep and abiding dislike, hell, as I do, for the Likudniks. The Likud party that I think is not too dissimilar from the Nazis in Germany. And I mean that. I don't want to use the Nazi references just offhandedly. I mean that. Prior to the Nazis setting up the death camps. But what the Likud party has done to the Palestinians, or any hope for peace, or any hope for a two-state solution, or any hope for anything, that the Palestinians might benefit from is a horrific example of how an occupying force can utterly decimate the soul, the spirit, and the physical being of people they're occupying. Damn Netanyahu. It's the best way I can put it. All right, Bruce in California, thanks. Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hello, Jim. Jim? Hold on a second. Oh, there you are, Jim. Thank you.
All right. Good to hear you again. I was out without Sirius for a month or so.
Uh-oh.
But I got it back. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you, you were talking about the Occupy, the 99 percenters. Do you think, I hope it doesn't end up going the way of the anti-war movement with, against Vietnam, and all of a sudden the war is over, although we seem to be getting into one war after another, but basically my concern is, do you think they're just gonna, okay, we won this one, and just forget about it, and everybody start wearing disco clothes, or...
Endless war for endless profit was a phrase coined to help explain. Perpetual war for perpetual profit. Gore Vidal. By Gore Vidal was written in an attempt to explain that, as other writers have, of course, that war is, in a capitalist society, in a capitalist system, war is more or less required. Naomi Klein has even come up with a term for it called disaster capitalism. It's not just about war, but, Hurricane Katrina, whatever. But capitalism demands constant war. Constantly. It has to be an ongoing process. Because the aftermath of war is exactly what capitalism feeds on. You have a disintegrated, in some instances, a disintegrated society. You can insert your own people or people who appear to be independent, but really are your capitalism's people. And you can feast on all the corpses that you've produced. And this goes on endlessly. So if you're asking me if I think the next step is war with Iran, it would not surprise me at all. I hope that doesn't happen because Iran has some pretty strong allies. Their initials are Russia and China. And both of these countries have heavy investments in Iran. They also have huge contingents of their nationals in Iran. And an attack on Iran is going to result possibly in, well, there couldn't be a World War III. That would... you know, that, I don't know, but an attack on Iran would be capitalism saying it's time to destroy as many of you sons of bitches as we possibly can. And by you sons of bitches, I'm talking about people all over the globe. This is insanity. Jim, thanks. I appreciate your call.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, back to your call. Sarah is in Santa Barbara. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Mike. You're absolutely, completely, 100% right about Iran and the Middle East. And it's really sad that few people have the deep knowledge enough to really understand this thing. But I actually called about election fraud, Republican style.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I'm pretty savvy about this, and I know I'm really up to date pretty much what Brad Friedman is doing,
mm-hmm.
and what black box voting has been doing
right.
over the years. Now, here's the situation, and I guess you already know this part of this, and that is that the Justice Department, and they go about things pretty lamely, at least that's what I've seen since Obama's been president,
mm-hmm.
Is checking out and looking into the it's Georgia, one of the states that have this voter ID issue, and saying it's not legal.
I think it's South Carolina. The states in the old Confederacy are under this perpetual Justice Department order. They cannot change their election laws unless it comes under review by the Justice Department because of the history of denying people the right to vote here in the South.
I see. But apparently they're ignoring all the other states that are doing the same thing, and they're just dealing with this one. Now, here's what I have to a new piece of the poll puzzle. All right. So simultaneously, what we have here is we have a bunch of clowns running for president, Republican. The Republicans aren't, we all think they're nutty, but the Republicans aren't all that happy with them either.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have here is the powers that be are really, really concerned and scared. And the only way they can really win is by, tampering with the voting machines, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure you're familiar with a cyclical economist like Ravi Batra.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a lot of them use astrology. And that's been very interesting for me. My astrologer, before 2001, before 9/11, 6 months before that, he told me. He said, we're going into a period where within the next year, we could have an attack on the United States like Pearl Harbor. He was right. Astrologers can't see great detail. Today, I spoke with him, the same astrologer, and he told me some good and some bad about this coming year. And what he told me was that that same configuration that was on the chart election day of both George Bush elections, where they were stolen. Bush stole both of those. I'm sorry.
Right.
Now,
listen, Sarah, let me just stop you for 1 second. I hate religion. And
it's
I think,
not a religion.
No, wait. Let me finish the sentence. I hate religion. I think astrology is for fools.
Oh, all right. Well, anyway, he feels strongly that this next election could be stolen. But put
right.
That aside,
well, you don't have to be an astrologer to do that. And
exactly.
And I could tell you, I could say this, Sarah, within the next 6 months, there's going to be some sort of tragedy near Santa Barbara, California. And I would probably be right. So astrology, astrology, please
right.
Don't. You had me very focused on what you were saying up to the point where you tell me that your astrologer said something. Then I start to get real wobbly, Sarah.
All right, put it aside.
Okay.
But the point is that looking at the whole thing without that, we can see that everything is ripe for them stealing the election.
That's true.
And what I'm upset about is that that they're not going, that the damn Justice Department, what in the hell, you know, you've got Diebold and ESG and E or whatever,
right.
And these companies, as long as those machines are out there and the Republicans are more desperate than ever, how the hell aren't they going to win? Because they're going to jimmy the damn thing. That's
right. That's the issue, and that's the part.
That's the biggest part.
That's right.
Software.
That means that there's only one thing I would add to that, Sarah. As has been pointed out to me by folks much smarter than I around this issue, the election has to be fairly close in order to steal it and steal it with impunity. If the election is not fairly close and it's stolen, remember how close the Bush-Gore election was, and in fact how close Bush Kerry election was. So when these elections are close, they can be stolen. If you'll remember also the Obama-McCain election was not close at all. So that's the only thing the only hope, unless all of these machines are blown into a million pieces. I would hope that secretaries of state in the various states eventually will come to the realization that the machines are capable of being skewed any way that the proprietary owners of the programs want to skew them. Now, that will only happen when secretaries of state in the various states are not Republican and are not weak-kneed Democrats. We need to destroy the system, Sarah. That's all I can say. Thanks, Sarah. Appreciate you checking in. The system. The voting machines are rancid. There is no question about that. The voting machines are adding to the destruction of representative government. But representative government was destroyed a long time ago, within the past 30 years. The machines are just validating validating that the theft never occurred. Because you can't prove it with the machines. When you have paper ballots, they're more accurate because each one has to be counted. But if you somehow buy off the counters, and see, this is what average folks would think. Well, you know, the machines are better because people counting, they will miscount. They will short count. They will do this, do that. So the meme that everyone has accepted is machines are infallible. I mean, we are hooked to machines from the moment we go to bed at night to the moment we get up in the morning and all day. It's all machines. The voting machines are never, ever, ever going to be done away with. They will never be replaced. Why should they be? It's a fail-safe system of skewing the elections for county commissioner up to president any way you want to skew them. So why should they ever? Now, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just screaming because this infuriates me. This is one more example of how it is not aspects of the system that are corrupt. It is the entire system that is corrupt. So we can destroy the machines. We can go back to paper ballots. We can find third party candidates. We can chase our tail until we get so dizzy we fall down dead. Or we end this filthy capitalist system that has completely destroyed representative government. So that's my response. As long as the capitalists and their money control the political system, you can have machines that do dances for you and sing songs every time you click your ballot. You know, it can spew out quarters. It can do anything. But it's the system itself that has to be replaced. Once the system is replaced, once capitalism no longer owns our form of government or the means by which our government becomes our government, once that's gone, then it's just a matter of going into the buildings where the machines are stored and throwing them in some, I don't know, landfill or melting them down and launching them into space. I don't know. They can be gotten rid of. But that will not happen as long as we have the form of economic / political system that we have in this country. It won't happen. That's like, you know, we've talked about this before, asking Congress to pass laws that gets money out of politics. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? The very people who benefit from money in politics, it is making them wealthy. It is turning them all into millionaires, and they are going to vote to end that system? It's only you and I and the proles who vote against our own best interests. The members that get to Washington don't vote against their own best system or their own. They don't vote against their own best interest. We do. We vote to end unions. We vote to allow the crazy people to decide whether or not we can have weapons that are fit only for mortal combat. You know, on and on and on. The only people in this country who vote totally within their own best interests are members of Congress, and they're all getting wealthy. You've been hearing those stories in the past few days. The filthy corporate media is picking up on this as simply a ha-ha, giggle-giggle story. They don't give a goddamn. Do you think mass media cares that these members of Congress are getting filthy rich? Well, okay. The voting machines are really kind of immaterial. Your child's in our Friday night, Brad Friedman will be hosting this program. For just about all the information that is available about the election fraud, not voter fraud. Voter fraud doesn't happen. Election fraud happens. As long as you have Republicans in office, you're going to have election fraud. Brad Friedman is an expert on this. Go to his website as soon as you can. I'm not sure what he will be doing tomorrow night, but it'll be posted at his website and Friday night. It'll be posted at bradblog.com. And we thank him in advance for doing a couple of nights here. Also, Bob Kincaid did not ask me to do this, and he doesn't know I'm about to do it, but I'm starting to get reports that there's a chance that the Horn radio show, Head On Radio Network, on the internets, is in, like just about everything else is in, financial trouble. It doesn't take a huge mountain of money, no pun intended there, to run Head On Radio Network, but it does take some. And I know that everybody is pushed to the wall. Liberal or progressive voices in this country are being systematically demolished. Whether it is an internet program, an over-the-air program, it's happening. So I'm going to ask you to do something if you can. The Head On Radio Network needs some support right now. And they always have had a page where you can go and make a PayPal contribution, $5, $10, $10,000. It doesn't make any difference. It would all be used. The website, you can get there at tinyurl.com. tinyurl.com/supporthorn. Supporthorn, H-O-R-N, Head On Radio Network. Once again, it's tinyurl.com/supporthorn. You might want to do that. I don't know if you are one of Bob's listeners. If you're not, you should be. You can hear him every single day. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I think it's .com, isn't it, Kathy? But it needs some help. I know you're tired of hearing about all the righteous online entities that need some help, but that's the truth. The capitalists are the capitalists. They control every goddamn thing, except for those of us whom they don't control. And Bob Kincaid is one of those people. So, please, tinyurl, what did I say it was? tinyurl.com/supporthorn. I mean, if 1,000 people send him $5, you know what I'm saying? Come on. I know. Okay. If 5,000 people sent him $1, do what you can. Jonathan is in Malvern, PA. Hey, Jonathan.
Yeah, you and Kathy are awesome. I had a quick question. How could the Pentagon not know about the Strait of Hormuz in Iran? I mean, how could they conceivably not know? I mean, they've got, you know, the Defense Intelligence Agency, they've got the CIA. All these agencies must have known about that.
About what?
About the Iran and the Strait of Hormuz and what they could do.
Oh, yeah, they've always known about it. Oh, sure, it's a pinch point. It's a very narrow, I think it's only about 20 miles, if that. It brings all the oil out of the Persian Gulf area into the Indian Ocean eventually, and then to the, you know, wherever it's going. That's why we have the Sixth Fleet, the Mediterranean, I think it's the Mediterranean Fleet, is now based in Bahrain, which is right there. It's right near the Straits of Hormuz. So, the Pentagon is always, the military planners have already known this, and in the past, just the threat of a presence of U.S. military would prevent anybody from getting serious. serious about blocking that waterway. But the Iranians, you know, the Iranians are being told over and over and over again, stop what you're doing or we're going to do this to you. Now stop what you're doing or we're going to do that to you. Oh, and by the way, don't forget, back in 53, we overthrew your government. Oh, and don't forget, we installed the Shah of Iran, and so many Iranians were tortured and murdered and beaten and brutalized because they didn't like living under a fascist Shah. So, you know, I mean, this whole idea that Iran is doing something bad because they're developing the nuclear capability is a joke when you consider the countries. North Korea, for Christ's sake, has nuclear weapons, don't they? Or
yeah.
the Pakistan does, China does, the U.S. does. So Israel does, on and on and on. So all the Iranians are doing, and I don't mean to minimize it, let me change it. What they are doing is responding to the threats. You know, Iran never sent operatives to this country to overthrow one of our duly elected governments. We did that to them. They didn't do it to us. Oh, you know what I'm saying. I got to leave it there, Jonathan. I'll see you Monday night, folks. Play nice with Brad. Have a good time. Don't forget, New Year's Eve is amateur night. If you can, stay the hell off the road. We're going to. We're having a sleepover party with a bunch of seven-year-olds. Ah! God, my life has changed. I'll see you on Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm Jim Cook.